Town Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Live Nation has teamed up with Sactown Sports for your chance to see local legend Hasan Minhaj at the Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center from beautiful downtown Sacramento on March 29th. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda hotline at 1 p.m. Chris Watkins will choose the number caller you need to be for your chance to win those tickets. More good news if you are a Kings and Niners fan. Kyle Juszczyk has restructured. He is staying in San Francisco / Santa Clara. He's staying. The Jackets are staying.
Right.
They're staying.
Whoopee. Yes. Awesome. I mean, that is really, really big for the Niners. I mean, it feels like, you know, Juszczyk is vital to the vibes of the Niners and just, you know, how they do things, how they want to do things. And, you know, last year was definitely the first time that I've really, you know, watched all every single down of every single Niner game. Has his usage gone down? Like, if I mean, you know, it feels like with Christian McCaffrey, he maybe, you know, his use might not be as important as what it was in the past. But I mean, obviously, in the biggest games this year, he came up huge, which is probably what they have him there to do. But I was just curious if typically he gets a little bit more of a workload.
I think it may be a little bit less, but everybody knows it's about the blocking schemes and everything that he does. It wasn't surprising that he restructured because, funny enough, they're probably the closest match made in heaven in terms of Juszczyk needs the Niners and the Niners need him. What he does and what he's really good at.
It's a dying breed, man.
It's perfect for the Niners and vice versa. So not really surprised that that happened because the market isn't outstanding, but it is unique to what he does, and I think he just likes being out here. I mean, he's always with the guys.
Still the highest paid fullback in the league, right?
Yeah. And if not, he was for a very long time, and what, the highest paid fullback out of what, three fullbacks, right? So, I mean, he loves the guys. We know how he gets down and is always at the games and things like that. So, good for Kyle Juszczyk.
The Jackets are fired.
Christian Juszczyk, good for the Jackets. And hopefully, they can start mass producing. They can team up with somebody out there in the Bay and get it taken care of. Or somebody up here in Sacramento, because you get the clothing lines going and they're rocking and rolling too.
Yeah, so, I think they're partnering with the NFL, but those will probably be a pretty penny.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. We know how that goes.
And $250 each.
We know how it goes when Keon Ellis is in the starting lineup. Sacramento is 5-0 when Keon Ellis starts this season. And, I mean, what more is there to say? We talked about Kevin Herter setting the tone, and Keon Ellis set the tone as well. I mean, to come in, he is literally the definition of, you don't got to get ready if you stay ready.
Yeah.
I mean, he comes in the game, immediately 5 points, hits his first three. There is something beautiful about being in the G League that I do think gets these guys ready. And even though you'll go to the games, and clearly they're not as many people, and they're smaller arenas, but the hunger that it builds, but not, you're not scared, right? It's not the big, bright lights. You're not going straight from college or anything like that. Yeah. It's just a different type of hunger that you see when these guys come up, and from the Fred VanVleets of the world to just have to fight your way up.
Yeah.
And you can either be worried about, oh my gosh, I'm going to blow this opportunity, but you just have to be built different. Yeah. And I think Keon Ellis, simply put, is just built different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mike Brown was gushing about him yesterday, and I definitely think your point about the G League is a really, really good one. I think that you just kind of find, I mean, in a weird way, and it's no disrespect to the G League. I love the G League. It's been great for the league in total, but I do think that there's a sense of much, and I'm sure you can speak on it from a baseball perspective, it being, you know, the AAA, AA system. I think a lot of people go to the G League and then say, I really don't want to go back there. Like, it was a great learning experience, but it's tough. I mean, you know, Jason and Dave were joking this morning about Jalen Slauson having to play in Stockton earlier today and then suit up for the Kings, and he definitely wasn't expected to play yesterday, but just the back and forth. I mean, right? It's a quick 30-minute drive down to Stockton, hour and a half, but, you know, it's something that, you know, it's not fun to do, and I think that these guys, when they get to the big club, there's an appreciation of, okay, like this is a stability and this is where I want to be. And let's, like you said, like let's not ruin this opportunity. I think that's a situation where, like you said, Keon's built different. I think when you're put in those kind of situations, you're either calm because you say, hey, I need to get this right. Let me make sure I don't ruin this. And some people say, this is my only opportunity. I have to show out. I got to show everything. And I think that's been the most impressive thing about Keon from day one is he's let everything come to him. He has not ever pressed. There hasn't been offensive moments where he's trying to show exactly what he can do. If anything, you could say he's too passive, but right. I think that's also a major bonus. I talked about it yesterday on the postgame. Like, the last thing you want when Keon Ellis is on the floor with Malik Monk, Keegan Murray, De'Aaron Fox, Harrison Barnes, and Domantas Sabonis, if Keon Ellis is taking a shot from anywhere, it doesn't matter if it's an open three, that's going to be a win for the other team. And I think Keon, more than anybody, understands that, and he understands when to pick and choose those spots. He took a three yesterday. It was definitely warranted. He knocked it down, ran in transition, got a layup as well in that first quarter.
It was a tough layup,
too. It was a tough layup. It was a really tough layup, running with De'Aaron as well. It was just a great performance. And, you know, if he didn't get into foul trouble in that third quarter, it really would have been just every single quarter just contributing. He finished with three steals. He was a team high plus 27 in the box minus, if you're into that kind of thing. Like, he really just checks all the boxes you would want, and he's still so young. And, I mean, I really do think, and I've been saying really since last year, I think especially defensively, sky's the limit for Keon. Like, I try to not get ahead of myself because he doesn't have that much actual on-the-floor experience, but just from what I see, the style that he plays, he's got a chance to really be, like, truly something special defensively in the league.
Yeah, and I think the biggest piece of this is that, simply put, the Kings don't have another guy like Keon on the roster.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah, I mean, Davion, but, like, he's not like Keon, because if he were like Keon, he'd probably be playing over Keon.
Exactly. So when you have somebody that, look, I'm not trying to go too far here, but when you did not make any trades and you don't have that long rangy defender, you got to find it somewhere.
Yep.
And no, Keon is not the same as a Jaden McDaniels or somebody like that, but he does give you a different look. Mm-hmm. And when that man is contesting a three, I mean, I've been joking about the Bucks shooting, what was it, 18%, but I don't know how much you can see with that man and his long arms jumping as high as he possibly can, and you're trying to make a shot over that. And then it was the opposite, Chris. It was, we're going to make sure we contest everything. So even a little bit later in the game, when maybe they weren't contesting the same way, the Bucks had no rhythm, they had no confidence, and they could not hit a shot.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you want to do when you talk about setting the tone, and you got to think if Keegan Murray does not play, they will go in the same direction.
Yeah.
The question is it time to discuss Keon being in that lineup even when Keegan does play?
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I think it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier. I still think that the clock has kind of been reset a little bit with Kevin Huerter, but, you know, we've talked about it also. A big reason why Huerter and HB weren't really questioned that hard on how firm their starting spot was because people below them weren't playing well enough to justify a starting spot. Well, that's not the case with Keon Ellis here. He's playing well enough to justify that spot. Now it's going to be on Kevin Huerter to keep it, really. I mean, he's just got to keep a step ahead of Keon, and the second he slips for a game, maybe two games, I wouldn't be surprised if Keon Ellis gets a look.
When we return, we will be joined by Brandon Nunes and Frankie Cardicelli, our Sactown Sports Kings insiders, but we are going to continue to take your calls and comments and concerns as we break down the Kings finally taking down the Bucks. I don't even know how old Brendan and Frankie were back in 2016.
I don't know. Brendan was born.
Brendan wasn't even born yet. We'll discuss all that and more when we get back. Styles and Watkins, don't go anywhere. Sactown Sports.
Local local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
It is an earlier edition of the King's Roundtable on Sacktown Sports with our guys, Brendan Nunez and Frankie Cardicelli. Before we get rocking and rolling with them, we are men of our words, and we are going to get to Garrett, who wants to be a part of the conversation, wants to talk Kevin Huerter. I don't know if Garrett's coming down my road. I don't know what Garrett has for us. I still got to apologize to Kevin Huerter for his performance last night. What's up, Garrett? You're on Styles and Watkins. What you got for us?
Oh, man. My question is, why the hell is he still on the team? Why is he starting? Mm-hmm. Dude is so inconsistent. It's not even funny. I mean, against the Spurs, he put up a big fat donut. In the last, I think, four or five games, he has a combined total points of 19. Mm-hmm. Hasn't even hit 20 points in five games combined. I don't know, man. It's really baffles my mind on why he is out there at all. I don't know. My mind is just blown. The game last night was amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take away from the win that the guys got. That was incredible. They played to their opponent's level, which can be frustrating at times, depending on their opponent. As we see, they lost to the Rockets. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the question with Huerter, why is he still there? I get everyone loves him in Sac, but I mean,
I hear you, Garrett. The thing is this, and simply put, in our Sacktown Sports Kings insiders, Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunez can hop in on this. Thanks for the call, Garrett. The bottom line is he was coming off a career year. So when you come off a career year and that team and what they did going to the playoffs, he was going to be on the roster. I think a better question is maybe the situation towards the trade deadline. Look, to be honest with you, Garrett, it already came out that they were trying to move Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes. There was nothing that made sense. There was nothing that added up. And you can thank Minnesota and how they raised the market. So that's why. And he is a guy where they feel like if he can get rolling, and he showed them what he could do. Kevin Huerter is only 26. So none of us know if his career, if his season high and career highs from last season, if that was the real Kevin Huerter, or if the more inconsistent Kevin Huerter that you saw in Atlanta was Kevin Huerter. So I think that's why he ended up on the team, and I think the price tags on other players was why he stayed on the team throughout the trade deadline, but it was reported that they were trying to move off him. As far as the starting lineup, that's up for debate. That's up for debate, at least in our eyes. Now, Coach Mike Brown has said that Keon Ellis, he hasn't really thought about Keon Ellis being in that starting lineup, but he is to the point where you can't continue to put guys out there that aren't going to produce. But when Kevin Huerter plays like last night, I do think that's enough to keep him in there. And I think that's what Coach Mike Brown keeps getting caught up in, as we discussed earlier in the show, that cycle. As soon as it starts to get real hot under Kevin's seat, he does enough to where it cools off again.
Yeah, and the most important thing is this Kings team needs floor spacing. And mm-hmm. when Kevin Huerter is at his best, that is what he provides this offense. And even it's not a small sample size. For the past, it doesn't feel like it, but the past 26 games, he's been playing around 28 minutes over those games. He's shooting 40% from three on six attempts per game. So mm-hmm. while it's been a rough stretch, and Kevin does have some peaks and valleys with his game, when he's performing well, and Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox are able to have him, Keegan Murray, Harrison Barnes, who's shooting 40% from three this season, that makes the Kings very dangerous. That's what worked for the model last year. The defensive shortcomings are a concern. Those have been addressed. I mean, it's very well known. Kevin has been off the floor late in games more lately. The past couple of games, not so much. He's played late against Houston, played late last night against Milwaukee, of course, in a blowout. But I think when you look at the floor spacing he provides, not many players in the Kings can provide that level of three-point shooting. When he's on, he's really going.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget that, like, when Domas first got there mid-season, him and De'Aaron clicked pretty quick, but that team still was missing things clearly offensively. And that offseason, going and trading for Kevin Huerter, signing Malik Monk, and drafting Keegan Murray, and also having Harrison Barnes already in the system, that spacing was so important for two guys, your two stars, Fox and Sabonis, that so much of their game is predicated on getting into the paint and making plays from there, and having that spacing is really important. So I think they could benefit from upgrading over Huerter. I would expect this offseason that they will entertain that and look for avenues to potentially do that, but he's a really important part of their offense. This free-flowing offense that is just read and react is in a very high-paced offense. I always talk about how he sprints nonstop in the half court as well, and I think there's a lot of value in that. So there are questions, but I feel like sometimes his strengths get overlooked a little bit in this conversation.
Yeah, I think the main thing is that the Kings are not a three seed last season without Kevin Huerter.
Right.
Yeah. So when you go back to the well and you go back to the next season, is there anybody that Coach Mike Brown feels can give you what Kevin Huerter gave you last season or a different version of that? That's where we're maybe starting to get to with Keon Ellis. But it's also been, you've gone from, and Chris and I looked this up about a month ago, it's gone from a career season for Kevin Huerter last season to, I believe this is the second worst season since his rookie year.
Yeah.
So the contrast has been ridiculous. It's as if you're in a sauna and then you walk outside, it feels even colder than it actually is because you were red hot. That's the problem.
And teams are just really used to Sacramento's like dribble handoff action right now. And I mean, coming off of last year, you kind of caught teams off guard, at least to an extent. And maybe you didn't have the level of respect that you do at this point. Teams aren't taking you as seriously. And now, like, those specific actions are known and scouted. And that was where Kevin was making a lot of his money.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, with Kevin Huerter too, it's one of those things where me and Frankie used to talk about all the time on Return of the Roar, which you guys have been uploading a lot more recently. Oh, yeah. So definitely go check that out. But we used to talk about all the time how when HB would play well, the Kings would tend to play well. And it feels like now when Kevin Herter's hitting his shots, it just feels like the offense just kind of falls into place. Like everything is a lot easier and, you know, it makes sense. It's everybody's ability to stretch the floor and keep things open. And, you know, I think when this team, If you have a 20-point Kevin Huerter performance, it feels like it's going to be really hard to beat this team just because it's just another guy that you have to worry about. And De'Aaron talks all the time how, you know, even when Kevin's not hitting his shots, he still has a great amount of gravity. But when he's hitting the shots, I mean, it's, you have to worry about him. You've got to worry about De'Aaron. If Keegan's got it going, Malik's on the floor with them, and then Sabonis as well. Like, there's just so much to worry about that you can't plug all those holes as a defense, and that's where the Kings were the number one offense in NBA history last year. And to your point, Alan, like a big reason why is because Kevin Huerter was so good and had a career year. And the closer you can get to last year's Kevin Huerter, I think the closer you get to being last year's Kings. And you know, last night was a taste of it, but I still don't think we've really seen for three games consecutive Kevin Huerter and this team look like how they did last year.
5-2. Kings are 5-2 and Kevin Huerter scores 20 or more.
There you go.
They are 6-2 when he scores 18 or more. Hasn't had many games with that many points, but yeah, like you guys are saying, like, if you can have a balanced approach, and the Kings, I think that's what they've been looking for more times than not this year, is having a balanced approach. They've been very top-heavy as far as Fox and Sabonis are doing what they do every night, and then it's kind of, can one of, which that's a question we weren't asking very much last year, can one of Barnes, Huerter, Murray, yeah, and Malik Monk's been doing what he does off the bench too, but those starting, that starting unit, like last night, you get 22 from Sabonis, 29 from Fox, 16 from HB, 11 from Huerter. Keon Ellis filling in for Keegan Murray with 7, but on 3 of 4 shooting. That's exactly what the Kings need every night. And again, that's hard to expect that from your starting five every night to score 129, but we've seen the Kings do it before. We've seen them average 120 points per game for a season. They had that balance last year, and they need it down this final stretch. 18 games to go. Can they do it? I think so. I think that this offense is capable of bouncing back, and last night was a prime example of how they can do that against a very good defense as well.
When we return, discussing Keon Ellis possibly entering the starting lineup and Harrison Barnes, why does it look so easy some days and not so easy on others? Styles and Watkins with the Sactown Sports Kings Insiders coming right at you next.
Sports. Check us out on YouTube. Search Sactown Sports and subscribe.
have an opportunity to win tickets to see Hasan Minhaj. Live Nation has teamed up with Sactown Sports for your chance to see local legend Hasan Minhaj at the Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center from beautiful downtown Sacramento on March 29th. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda hotline at 1 p.m. Chris Watkins will pick that caller. Also, we just got confirmation. Starting to turn the page here. Not quite. We still got the Kings insiders with us, Brendan Nunes and Frankie Cardicelli. But Jovan Buha, Lakers writer for The Athletic, will join us at 12:30. We will get some insights on the Lakers. Are they coming in ready to rock and roll, or are the Kings going to hand them another L? Guys, before the break, we were discussing Keon Ellis and also Harrison Barnes. Here's my question with Harrison. It's a very simple question, and we're trying to keep everything above the basic line and stay away from the things we always discuss. But 16 points, and it all just looks so easy. Yeah, he was 4-for-7 from 3-point range, 6-for-12 as far as field goals. He didn't even need to get to the free throw line, which we thought he might because of how aggressive he may need to be with no Keegan Murray. But why does it look so easy sometimes for Harrison Barnes? It just looked like it was within the flow of the offense. Is Keegan Murray that big of a difference?
I mean, I think it's just that problem the Kings have had as far as they're looking to find who's going to be that other guy to help out those two starters. And Malik Monk, I mean, some nights, it should be Keegan Murray every night. Like Harrison Barnes, the role he's currently been playing this year, I think people have been kind of hard on him because of the contract he signed. And was he overpaid? We won't really know. I mean, you might have your opinion on it, but we won't really know until the contract's over in most cases. Probably trending that way. But the NBA, you know, the way that the salary cap is working, it kind of might make sense in a year or two. But I think when you look at that, it's been just a huge overshadowing of what he's been doing. Keegan Murray should have been someone that can be taking more initiative on offense. And I think that that's been something that the Kings are trying to do. They want to get him more involved. I think that it kind of goes to him to be more outspoken and be that guy that's going to say, hey, I feel good about this position I'm in. I want to take advantage of it. I want to shoot more. I want to get more opportunities. Harrison Barnes is kind of a guy that needs to play as good a defense as he can, which, again, is not going to be the best defense you have, but it's what the Kings have on their roster. But I'm not really looking at the Kings needing more out of Harrison Barnes. I think knocking down threes at a high rate is important. He's at around 40% on the year. Rebounding a little more, to me, probably is the area I'm looking at as improvement. Like Harrison Barnes at his size, I think crashing the boards is something he needs to do a little bit more of, but I'm not expecting Harrison Barnes to be that 2015, 2016, 18 points per game player. Like, it's nice when he does have those games like last night where he has it going, but I think when Keegan Murray's healthy, I think him still needing to take that next step and take that initiative to say, hey, like, if this offense is sputtering and Fox is getting clogged in the paint, his threes aren't falling, if Sabonis is getting closed in on, I need to take initiative and score off the dribble. Because we've seen Keegan Murray. He can score off the dribble. He can do it on his own. He can knock it down on spot-ups and DHOs as well, but he still hasn't been that spoken voice in the lineup that can say, I can get a bucket when we need one.
He had 6 rebounds last night, Harrison.
Wow. Need more of that. Wow. That's probably
6.
How many times has he done that?
I was
going
to look up how many times has he had
many
5 or more rebounds. Because he averaged, I think it was a career year a year ago or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Last year, or, I'm sorry, for his career, Harrison Barnes, 5 rebounds per game. This year, about half of that, 2.8. So need more from him on that end, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think what Frankie said about Keegan holds true for Harrison and Kevin and really everybody. I mean, same for De'Aaron and Domas, but you see De'Aaron go and get his. Domas has quieter nights as well offensively when it comes to scoring the ball at least. But I think Harrison is a guy that is just like, if he sees an advantageous situation that he's in, he's going to go try and capitalize. But if he doesn't, I don't think he's one that's going to go try and create that necessarily. So I think he's just really trying to pick his spots. And the offense in general applies, again, for everybody, is you have to be aggressive because everybody's going to get their opportunities. It's who's going to be the one to say, no, Domas, come over here and set this screen, or Kevin, get out of the way, sort of thing. And, you know, Kevin could be that guy saying it to somebody else as well. But I think it's just about who is coming into that game with the aggressive mindset. And sometimes that can have to do with matchups, or sometimes it's just, yeah, I mean, as straight up as who comes in looking to get more shots up, really.
And yeah. The Harrison Barnes rebounding thing. You said that how many times has he done 5 or 6 in a game?
Yeah.
Didn't really expect this, but he has had 5 or more rebounds 10 times this season. That's a career low by a wide margin. And with 18 games to go, he would, even if he had 5 rebounds every game for the rest of the way,
he would not catch his previous low, which was his rookie season where he had 30 games and 5 more rebounds. So we're looking at a significant drop-off from a guy who last year, 40 times, he had 5 more rebounds. This year, he's at 10. Oof. Maybe that's because Domantas Sabonis has just been clearing everybody out and getting those boards.
And Keegan gets a decent amount of rebounds, too.
I still think that it's a little inexcusable for a guy that's 6'8 at that size. You gotta crash a
little
more.
I've got a fun number. So you said HB has had 10 times this year, 5 or more. 19 times this season, Harrison Barnes has had 0 or 1 rebound.
Oh, jeez. That is very fun.
Isn't that so fun? Are we having a blast with that number?
So fun.
It's great.
Black Falcon.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be better. You can't do that. You cannot do that.
Davion
Mitchell can do that.
No, that can't happen. Okay, but can you hear me out on this? Can you hear me out on this?
Black Falcon's got clipped wings.
Just hear me out. If we look at the average rebounds as a team, what if the situation was that their average rebounds as a team was similar to last season and this season, and it was just going to Kevin Huerter, who's been more of a monster on the boards due to his up and down shooting and Keegan Murray being a little bit more aggressive. If it's not a detriment to the team, then I don't know how much it bothers me.
They still are not. I would say if you take away Domantas Sabonis again, who has played, I believe, in every game so far of his season, mm-hmm. I don't know what it looks like if he's not like that rebound. Like, they're 17th, I believe, in the NBA right now in rebounds per game. They're probably near the 28th, 29th.
You remember how bad they were before he got there?
Awful.
Yeah.
And this is the alarming part for me. And again, focusing on Harrison Barnes rebounding, I know it's not the reason why the Kings have had shortcomings, but these are the following players that have been averaging more rebounds than Harrison Barnes this year. Okay. Malik Monk, Kevin Huerter, De'Aaron Fox, Trey Lyles, Keegan Murray. But looking at Malik Monk averaging more rebounds per game than Harrison Barnes is pretty alarming to me.
He's got 30 more total rebounds than HB this year.
That's a little alarming. Now, maybe that could be because that's G-Man on the call, isn't it? Maybe because Malik Monk's playing more minutes. That could be. I'm not sure if that's in front of me. Do you have those totals in front of you?
No. HB's played 200 more minutes this year.
Yeah, I think you need to crash a little more. I mean, again, maybe that it's a part of maybe HB's getting back on defense more times than not. I don't know. I think it's just a matter of crashing. And Sabonis has 13.5 a game, but you know, the Kings have given up a lot of second chance opportunities before, and it could continue if they don't have more guys and they're crashing.
Yeah, at least they're getting it done. And Harrison Barnes, he gives us flashes, which is what we do like to see, as we were also discussing Keon Ellis and what he's brought to the table. I know that both of you were in the post game presser as well. The whole situation with Mike Brown saying he hadn't given it any thought didn't really hit me the way it hit other people, because that just tells me that he hasn't given it much thought yet. This is only the second game with Keon consecutively, right? And we don't know if Keegan is going to play or not, but that didn't make me feel like it couldn't happen.
No, I mean, I don't think Mike's going to sit up there and, like, the players hear these things. Mm-hmm. And Kevin is a guy that is obviously his primary skill is shooting, and that's going to come with some ups and downs. And I think it's also there's a lot of a mental toll and that comes with that roller coaster of being a shooter. And from Kevin Huerter's perspective, you hear your head coach say publicly that you're debating changing the starting lineup.
Right.
Like, that probably does not help your mental, you know, and a lot of the fan base is already pressing for you to maybe get moved, you know? So I think it doesn't, I'm the same as you, it doesn't make me think that it could never happen, but I do wonder if Keon's ready for that. I mean, personally, I don't think he is quite yet, actually. I love Keon, but there's definitely still a lot of inconsistencies, moments where he looks a little lost offensively. I mean, you're trading one side of the ball for the other, really.
Yeah, well, and it would be, if we're assuming Keegan, De'Aaron, Sabonis, Harrison, and Keon, that's also a combination that we have not seen before, right? As far as a starting lineup, right. Keon has just started as a fill-in. It's been Chris Duarte who came in for Huerter. So at this point in the season, and the way I've been looking at this is Mike Brown sees the team as production and positions, right? Not necessarily Keon or Huerter. I need production out of these positions. And if he's looking at it like this, he might say, is the risk – Is the reward worth the risk at this point in the season?
Yeah, which is a fair question. And to your point of like the positions, Mike Brown has said before, like 1-4 is all interchangeable in this team, specifically offensively. It's just make sure that you can guard the guys that are on the floor for the other team.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Keon, again, fills a role defensively. I think he's extremely active. One of their better guys at getting deflections, super active hands. It's interesting to watch because he plays defense so differently than Davion Mitchell, but they're both effective in different ways. And I'm encouraged by his offense. I think the shot is legit. I think he's had good cutting and things like that, but there are still concerns there that I, you know, he's a second-year guy, first year where he's really playing in the NBA, and I would expect that to come with some ups and downs.
Yeah, I mean, Frankie is, you know, doing his thing, always talking about the Yankees, but taking it to baseball, if somebody is balling in that seventh hole, right, does that mean, oh, let's it's been a couple good games, let's move him to the three spot? No, let's let him get comfortable in that position, right, just like your boy Giancarlo, who's now going to be a seven hitter.
Stop.
And see what he does.
I'm having a rough day, please.
When we return, the most surprising part of the win last night, we asked the guys, and then we turn the page to the Los Angeles Lakers coming into town tonight. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Here with the Sacktown Sports Kings insiders, Brendan Nunez and Frankie Cardicelli. Guys, there's a conversation going on in the Sack Chat, and you know I'm interested in your thoughts on this, just as far as the, I guess, feelings on Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes, right? So some people think you're too negative. This is a day where there's a 35-point win, right? So when you discuss Harrison Barnes and Kevin Huerter, do you think that the fan base, because a lot of times, and look, I'll go back and forth with you in the Sack Chat. A lot of times we are reacting to fans' calls. I didn't tell so-and-so to call in and say, why is Kevin Huerter still on the team? But if somebody's going to call in and say that, we're going to react to it. How do you guys feel about the, I guess, narrative as far as Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes? And after you sit there and you talk about a win and how well they did, I mean, is there such thing as a perfect win? And is it unfair to continue to go at these guys when at this point in the season, should we just say, we know who they are? Either they're going to show up or they're not going to show up. Let's just pray for the rest of the season.
Like you said, the questions were asked. We're just answering, sharing our takes on. That's all. I mean, again, I don't want to overshadow the fact that the Kings had maybe their most impressive performance of the year last night, but it also can be said that, yeah, we do kind of know what this team's identity is. We've seen them have wins like this before and then turn around and completely lay an egg. And until that doesn't happen, yeah, I'm going to kind of look at those problems that they're having and say that this team's ceiling is still what it is. But when they're at their best, they can prove that they can beat any team.
Right.
And that being said, like I'm looking at tonight, just saying like how is it going to look tonight? What does that blueprint look like tonight? Can Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes, who I think they did most of their damage in the first quarter, but look what that does as far as setting the tone for a game. Having those players able to come out there, help out De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, who have been kind of playing on by themselves recently.
Right.
Being able to have that impact is priceless. Now, again, for the whole entire, like, I guess using those two players as a point of emphasis, maybe as scapegoats in some opinion for some of the downfalls, I think it kind of goes back to the front office as far as the team is the same exact roster 1-8 as it was opening night last year.
Right.
Your starting five and your top three players at the bench are the same exact players. And I think Brendan and I, when we were recording the other day, we looked at the list of teams in the NBA. I don't know if there's one other team in the entire NBA that has the same exact 1-8 that they had opening night last season in 2022. There probably isn't one. So looking at those two players and being unhappy with their inconsistent production, yeah, that's valid. But those two players have been a huge part of why this team has been successful over the past season in three quarters. Like, this team has been a winning team. They were three seed last year. They're in the mix for a top six seed this year. But being unhappy with their production is warranted. But I think the main focus is the fact that this team has been the exact same roster for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I do get it. I mean, the core is De'Aaron Fox, Keegan Murray, Domantas Sabonis. So naturally, you're going to look at the other spots and be like, okay, how can we improve around this? And I think it's understandable. Those two guys, if you're talking about eventually reaching a championship caliber team, those two spots need to eventually be upgraded. Like, that's no secret.
You talk about it all the time. Those are your Will Barton and Paul Millsap right. to KCP and Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair comparison. And you can even look at Minnesota made some big upgrades as well, and I think follows a somewhat similar like build path to kind of how Minnesota went about it or to how Denver went about it. But I get it. Those are the two spots that eventually need to be upgraded, but they still provide a lot right now, mm-hmm. offensively specifically. And there is a level of inconsistency, but I think it's what you said. Like, we know that about these guys. That's not something new. Now, Harrison's extremes are different, and like mm-hmm. you said, Herter's had more lows for sure this season, but it doesn't feel that different to me.
Yeah, I'll Chris, I'll let you hop in here as well. I think for me, it just represents that there's more than two types of fans, but there are two main types of fans, right? And the one type of fan is, I'm never going to be okay with the fact that this person or that person doesn't always show up, and I'm always yearning for more. And the other type of fan is, I know who this person is. I know what this team is. Let's just enjoy it, right? It's a little bit different when you can just enjoy it, mm-hmm. right? We have to analyze what goes down.
Yeah.
And the issue is, if they've been rolling like this, that's different, yeah. right? And if we sit here and all we do is praise the Kings all day long because right. they won,
we'll hear
and
the
then
opposite.
And then they say, you're front running, then they lay an egg tomorrow and we got to come down their road. Now it's, well, you were just praising them yesterday.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do both. Yeah. It's part of it.
Yep. And I don't have much to add, but all I'll say is just, yeah, like one game isn't going to change the outlook on the entire season. Like, you know, yeah, Kevin and HB had a great game. We talked about it at the top of the show. We gave them their flowers for having a good game. But looking at how they've played the entire season, like we can't just let last night overshadow that, you know, like you guys said, they've been both of those spots have been very inconsistent. And maybe you can argue, hey, why aren't we coming down Keegan Murray's road more so? He's also been inconsistent, especially here offensively. But and I would say that we're probably going to start to if he continues to put together a lot of just goose eggs, really. I mean, yeah. he's really struggled here recently. So, yeah, I would just say that, you know, we can't just because the Kings have one good night, that doesn't – and it works the other way too. Just if they have a bad night, we can't just kill them. We've got to kind of keep the whole wide view perspective on everything.
This is who they are. And, like, again, this has been one of the more frustrating, annoying, whatever you want to use to describe it, aspects about this Kings team that when they are really on, they're so good. And, again, it goes back to the scoring, the aspect of scoring. I think, Brendan, you pointed this out to me first about when they score 120 points. They are 32-4 this season when they score 120 points.
Mm-hmm.
For a team that I think averaged 120 points last year, it just – it's incredible what this team can do when their offense. I think the losses that they had were, I think one was the blown lead in Phoenix. Yeah. One was the blown 4-point lead in Milwaukee. So we're looking at two of those losses were games that the Kings were in control of and on their way to getting a win. Mm-hmm. Like it's the offense is everything. And a lot of talk about the defense has been there. But if the offense is working for this Kings team, and again, 35% from three, that's the mark I put down. If there's 35% from three or better, they're 29-9. If you're scoring a lot of points, you're knocking down threes, the Kings are very, very hard to beat. And that is similar to last year. But as far as similarities go to last year, again, 37-27 through 64 games. Last year, one game better, 38-26. Like, this is exactly who we saw last year. It's just the road to this point has been a little different. It's been a little more of those, you know, the losses, the bad losses have been there more. I think last year the Kings maybe lost more quality opponents, but that's when the frustrating part is. If the Kings do miss the playoffs by a couple of games, you're going to look at those rough losses. And again, Sam Amick listed them on The Athletic. There's, I think, over 10 losses the Kings can look at and kind of scratch their heads about. But the offense. The offense is everything. And like last night, we saw it. If they're at their A game, they're very, very hard to beat.
Before we turn the page, guys, what was the most surprising part of the win last night?
Probably that they just did everything well that they had been doing extremely poorly the last few games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the spray threes, which People are getting tired of hearing that word, but it's a huge aspect of Sacramento's offense. They did a great job, again, not getting too deep. They limited their turnovers, and so many guys were hitting the paint and finding shooters, and then you see it's kicked out, and that guy drives in, and they find another shooter. I thought Keon had a good play like that, and a lot of those guys out there. And then the defensively being really physical and closing out the shooters. I almost forgot it for half a sec there, but talking about, you know, high-fiving at the top of it, and I thought they Milwaukee did just miss some shots, but overall the Kings did a good job of creating their own threes and also limiting Milwaukee on the other end, but they also took away their paint points. It was just really one of the best defensive performances we've seen. Outside of Giannis, everybody was extremely inefficient on Milwaukee's side.
Yeah, and we talk about the offense, but the defense as well last night. I think that was Milwaukee's second lowest scoring game of the season.
Their lowest field goal percentage and three-point percentage on the season.
From the Sacramento Kings. Again, and they were missing Chris Middleton. They weren't at the top of their game, but I guess we were joking last night about the Kings and Bucks were both missing their Chris Middletons. That was the Keegan Murray comp coming out of college. But to me, it kind of goes hand-in-hand with the spray threes, just kind of moving the ball around. 22 first-half assists last night. They had 24 in the whole entire game against Houston. Last night, 22 in the first half, which tied a season high. The Kings, when they move the ball around, very good. I'll throw one more just record out there. When the Kings pass out 30 or more assists this year, they're 22-5. Again, when this team is moving the ball around, they're knocking down shots, which, again, has been up and down with guys like Herter and Barnes kind of chipping in sporadically. Keegan Murray, who's been sporadic on offense as well. But last night was a perfect example of this team at their best.
Chris Watkins?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Brendan's and say pretty much just shutting down everybody else. I mean, we talked about it a bit earlier, but to hold the rest of the guys, the non-Giannis guys, to, 20 of 65, I think, from the field was really, really impressive. I mean, you know, to not have Dame go off, to not have guys like Pat Connaughton go crazy. I mean, how many times have we seen dudes like Daniel House walk in and give you career high? Etuan Moore will give you a career high. There's so many names that I could just throw out there of guys who got career highs. Duop Reith, shout out Taylor Mays, out there somewhere getting generational wealth because the Kings allowed him to go crazy. And last night, it was none of them. It wasn't like, oh, okay, yeah, Giannis went crazy. And then, oh my gosh, you look at it here, Jay Crowder actually had 18 points. Like, that's a good game for nobody. Nobody else had it going, and I think that's by far the most impressive thing for me last night.
Turning the page, when we return, the Lakers are in town. How do the Kings get another W? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.